All right, ninth house. Who's got Pluto in the ninth?
Okay, so ninth house is always going to point to the way in which we're expanding our horizons to realize more of the truth. There's always more to realize. Every experience, if we think of it as a pilgrimage, will give us greater perspective and insight into what this is all about. So there's a calling for a sort of inherent optimism in the ninth house. Capricorn ninth house, you can think of the tradition or a traditional spiritual lineage or traditional spiritual practice or a philosophy or cosmology. Let's just use the example of a mainstream church. So here's a cosmology. The Bible is the word of God, and here's the rules, and here's what you should believe, and thus what's right and what's wrong. Capricorn ninth house, these are the things to believe. And then that's always going to have this issue of suppressing our intuition. Our intuition is our non-linear, non-empirical way of just knowing and connecting with the pulse of creation. It's how we sense the movement of the Tao and can understand it and know it without knowing how. We don't find out how to know how, we just practice opening our intuition. And we practice opening our intuition by being authentic, being honest, not getting in the way of our natural connection to the cosmos. And so this Aquarius impulse is pushing up all of the beliefs and the conditioning and the constructs and the assumptions and the philosophies and the isms, and also the alienation that comes as a result of all of that, and saying, break out of that so you can touch base with the truth. And this will both be personal realizations where a person has a moment of realizing, I'm certain, I just know this, I don't know how I know it. I'm certain that my sexuality has nothing to do with how much God loves me. I'm certain that I'm not a sinner. I feel the sense of I'm a sinner, Capricorn, but I think that's all conditioning. Because when I look at it in this moment, I don't find it there. So we just intuit there's something else. And the thing with the ninth house is, Steve Wolfson once said this beautifully, we're always sort of evolving from truth to more truth. So like we're gonna expand upon our existing understanding and add more to it. And so maybe in our existing understanding, we formed a lot of conclusions and boxes and kind of closed it. Then we're just gonna realize, oh, I had some insight there, but there's more. So let me not get dogmatic about what I think I knew, because there's a lot more. So we liberate and we have that insight. And it could also be that experience of speaking the truth. I'm gonna speak the truth, I'm gonna speak my truth. And that's going to make me the fear of Pluto in Aquarius. I might be different. I might be outed. I might not be a part of the church anymore. They might look at me and say, you don't belong here, or they might argue with me. And to just trust one's intuition. And there's a sort of intuitive path that unfolds that you can't chart. Like Aquarius ninth house says, the path before you is an extension of your own individuality, and it's going to unfold inside of you as it seems to be happening outside of you. So just walk the journey, see the friends and the teachers and the experiences that come. It's all a part of the algorithm. And it can feel all new and exciting. And the fear and the attachments could be, I need to explain myself to my people or my family or my church. What if no one understands me? What if I'm wrong? What if I make a mistake? What if I'm leaving everything behind? And that's the sense of anxiety that can be here, and we just got to trust ourselves.
Beautiful. And as you're speaking, what comes up for me is reading in the news how the United Methodist Church has been basically they're not united anymore, and it's the largest congregation in America of the Protestant religion, and it is literally split in half because one half is saying we have to hang on to the past. You know, talk about the Capricorn Aquarius archetypes. It's
Right.
just live coverage. Perfect example of what you're talking about with Ninth House. And then this other half is because they said, no, we have to include LGBTQ people. And that is the where the schism is occurring, is this about sexuality and belief and religion. So this is right exactly what you're
I'm
talking about.
so glad you mentioned that because, Lutheranism in general, Protestantism, everything that happened there is like it's an Aquarius thing at first, right? They're being persecuted. They're the minority, right? And then look at all the mainstream Protestant churches that are incredibly conservative that exist in this world. And so then that has to have its own liberation process. There are always going to be factions within every group that's going to break out. And that's in our own mind too. Like these exist inside of us. So it's like our own conditioning, our own, I've decided and determined that I know what it is always going to be challenged by some rebellious inner component of our own psyche. That's just going to be like, no, you're wrong. Do that. No, don't tell me that. You go there. You don't, who are you anyway? It's always going to happen inside and outside. It's fascinating.
Yeah, and isn't it interesting that like the back in the day, well, it's actually when Pluto was last in Aquarius, 1532, when Henry VIII was told by the Pope, no, you cannot marry Anne Boleyn, and so he broke off and formed his own church, and that was the huge schism of the Catholic Church. Now it became the Catholic Church and like what became the Anglican or Protestantism, but that rift. So he, the outsider, right? He becomes the outsider. And it's, isn't it interesting? Like, and there's the shadow Aquarius at play, that these denominations which have evolved over the last, Lutheranism, and follow over all these hundreds of years, have now with the United Methodist Church, the example of being this, now they're the ones that are cutting off and abandoning, like they were the ones that were the outsiders, and now it's like the coin is flipped. And I just
Also,
think
a
that's
Pluto in
really
Aquarius shadow. It's a really important point
great.
for us to make. Shadow is, I'm going to fight the man, or I'm going to fight these persecute, right? And then you don't realize, or like, I'm going to fight against these oppressive political forces. And one does not realize that they're becoming an oppressive force themselves. And that shadow will
Also
then
that,
come back down, and they'll be doing the same exact things and treating other people in the same exact way.
and also the Inquisition, the Spanish Inquisition was also another Pluto and Aquarius in the Middle Ages. So
Oh,
do
okay.
you think like we do? Well, if you don't, we're gonna kill
Right,
you.
right,
We're gonna torture
right.
you, kill you. And so and even Galileo was they tortured Galileo because he said in the perfect Aquarian fashion, this paradigm where you think that the sun revolves around the earth, well, guess what, you're wrong. So it's fascinating how the confluence of these archetypes and how they all come together, the light and the shadow. All right, 10th house.
All right.
Oh, this is epic, Ari. This is
You
amazing.
have to get a job? Do you have to do that? Like, who said? What if
Who
defining that,
said?
what does it mean to be a parent? Okay, so Capricorn 10th house is going to be defining oneself according to what is necessarily responsible. What is one's role? How can I participate in a society in a personally meaningful way while also being responsible for myself and contributing to the world in a way that's helpful? There's a sense of ethics and alignment and integrity and responsibility. But that becomes so quickly, I have a responsibility as a man to make sure that I am dot, 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 dot. And then there's also, I can't just leave my job. There's no other job opportunities in the field of the thing that I got the degree in. Right? It's like box, box, box. So there's a liberation happening right now where we're learning to face our fear of failure, punishment, judgment. Really, the existential fear with Pluto in the 10th is I'm gonna be a bad person. I'm not gonna meet my responsibilities. It's all gonna be on me. There can be this like deep sense of like I am a sinner and I've really messed up in a big way. That fear of doing it wrong can keep a person in the same oppressive structures or agreeing to the same patriarchal constructs and conditioning that is absolutely unnecessary. So there's a sense of I want to become an astrologer. I want to quit my job and I want to just work with animals. Yes, I spent thousands of dollars, and I'm still paying it off to get my degree as a lawyer, and it's not what's here. And so to experience one's role in life and the various microcosms of that family, job, society, to experience one's role and purpose and meaningful and responsible contribution beyond the lens of what's conditioned is the point here. So I don't have to experience something. I don't have to think of my job and what I'm here to do in the same way. There's another dimension, but do you have more to say to that?
Okay. Oh my God. How do I add to that? I can't. This is your gems of wisdom here. I will sit with for a long time. So yeah, I don't
I'll
know
add
how to add
one
to
more
it.
point then. So
Sure, about 10th house.
we can say in the 10th house, we lose our soul, Pluto in the 10th, to our projection of external judgment. We become this idea of what we're supposed to be, and we can judge others too, because we're keeping this ourselves in jail. We're keeping ourselves in these boxes, because if I don't fit into these boxes, I'm gonna feel shame, fundamental, a deep sense of wrongness within my own being. So we're just liberating from all of that. And it could be also, 10th house, fourth house says a lot about gender. So it can be there are all these emotional dynamics inside of me that because of society or my job or my roles, I've never been able to explore. So it just opens a door to redefine what it's like to be a human at this day and age. Completely new experience.
Yes. And I was thinking the 10th house being about the public eye and the public image. It's like, that the revolution will be televised. People are going to see this transformation. It's going to be very visible
Oh,
to
absolutely.
the world.
Yeah.
So, yes, that's
Absolutely.
big. All
Yeah.
right.
That, I mean, and there is also the archetype of just, Jeff Green speaks about this in the Uranus book, where there can be an internal liberation that happens without anything showing on the outside. And so this is an important point to make. This doesn't, all of this stuff doesn't mean things are necessarily changing on the physical level. It might be, and usually it is. Especially with strong like Taurus Uranus stuff going on in Jupiter, it's like likely, but there can be an internal liberation while still seemingly living the outer Saturn world and going through the motions in the ways that are relevant for that soul, but internally free. And it's important to recognize that too. Yeah.
Yes, the change on the inside. Yes,
Yeah.
absolutely. I think about I remember Eckhart Tolle said once that there are a thousand, he talked about self-realized beings like Jesus and Buddha and such, and he said that there are thousands and thousands of souls all over the world who are just they're you could say they're saints. They're fully realized, and you wouldn't know it. They're
Wouldn't
just
know it.
simply, they maybe they're a carpenter or a plumber or just something which is it's not loud out on the stage, and it's just they're doing their thing and they're completely free. So yeah.
Yeah,
All
I
right,
think.
11th house.
Okay.
Pluto in the 11th. Pluto in Aquarius in the 11th house.
So the conditioning with Capricorn in the 11th would be the country club that has its rules. This is how you have to dress. Or the political party with its particular ideology and political points. Whatever, there are two dimensions, like whatever community or group we're a part of, there's gonna be its ideas of belonging and what it means to be a part of it. But on a more internal level, 11th house also corresponds to just the archetype of ingenuity and the impulse for liberation. So there's always a way of experiencing and thinking about this human life from a higher dimension of consciousness where we solve the problems of life because we're thinking of them from a higher consciousness. So there's also Capricorn in the 11th, which is the technologies that we're using, the things that have become structured and integrated in society, in the status quo, the innovations that I have in my own life, the things that are new and exciting and blossom. Like everyone's the phone is new technologies. Everyone's got the phone and all these things. And then they become their own Capricorn. And Aquarius wants to look much more holistically. It wants to look at how are these technologies and these ways of living and our mission statement as a community, how is it impacting the larger whole? Because Aquarius, again, if you understand the 11th house Aquarius archetype as there's always a fractal out of the consensus. And even when a change happens amongst a group, within that group, that's going to fractal out into rebellious or liberated outposts. And that's going to keep on going because it's never about staying conditioned. And what happens whenever there's a new form, it's going to innovate and improve upon and evolve out of the existing form. But it's not going to yet be at that point of arrival where it's vibrating with the intelligent design of the entire universe, right? It's like there's so much, it's bigger than we understand. So when we have a new technology or a new political ideology, there's something innovative about it, but something very limiting. And inherently, until it's fully inclusive, it's going to be to some degree exclusive. So there are going to be people that won't be included in that. There are going to be elements of the earth, environments, and subdivisions of society that are going to be, for example, all of the metals that go into this thing right here that we all love so much, and the cars that we're driving now, the electric cars, that causes such immense environmental devastation and social devastation all around the world. It's not the answer. It has an element of improvement. So the Aquarius 11th house says you have to be willing to think outside of the box of the group. Even if it was an innovative and liberating group originally, you have to be willing to liberate yourself from that. And it's going to go as far as we're willing to become an observer and continue to question the conclusions that we keep on making. So some of the fears and the attachments could be, well, I don't want to be an outsider. I don't want to be seen as different. I don't want to be the black sheep, 11th house. There can also be this obsession, which we'll see a lot of, and this can be its own whole conversation. There could be an obsession with technology and how that's going to save everyone's, going to have their own AI Google search implanted in their brain, and all knowledge and information and communication can be available. Like all of these things where we see technological innovation as almost becoming its next Tower of Babel, like this, like the apex of human intelligence and how great and important we are. So a thing to look out for would be sort of the breaking down of human arrogance, both the strong fixation on these developments and where many people will use it for good, many people will use it for bad, serving more humanity, hurting humanity, but also the liberation from that to ultimately realize that this is a metaphor. This whole, I actually really feel that this whole phase of human evolution that we're in right now within the whole yuga cycle, where we have a lot of devices and technology and we mine for metals, is a very short phase. I think we're going to find there's a wave evolving technologically later in the future where we can do things far beyond what we understand that doesn't involve so much destruction and environmental pain. I think that's the bridge that will take us from where we are to where, you know, galactic beings can travel across galaxies and visit other planets. Like there's more for us to think about, but we're very much limited by the precedent. So the issue with the 12th house Capricorn is it can feel like life is a big jail. We're dealing with all the ways in which time and space is given meaning and purpose and form, and like it has some sort of implicit meaning or purpose, and then we end up getting enslaved by it. So we have the issues of martyrdom, sacrifice, working really hard, giving one's life over to a higher purpose. And that greater question is, what's the meaning of all of this? What is it really for? We can also have the energetics of feeling lost, like there's no guide, there's no guidance in life. I need something to train me, to discipline me. So Capricorn in the 12th really has this quality of learning how to devote time and space to higher purpose. We're disciplining ourselves with respect to love to become an instrument. When we move into Aquarius, we're letting go of the time and space component. So we're not, so it's like time and space, 12th house is like the metaphor of being in a spiritual monastery, right? The idea is you're cultivating your spirituality and you're disciplining yourself. You're on a schedule, you're following a routine. You know, you have a practice that you follow. There are rules that you follow so that you're disciplining your mind with respect to spiritual truth. When you move into Aquarius, keep all of that, but just take away the discipline and take away the monastery and take away the form and the structure and the anything. It's just saying that this world is a dream and that all the things that are happening in this world are tarot cards manifesting that seem to be real, but are just reflecting what's happening in the mind. So it's about having a dream and realizing after you have that dream that these are all symbols. So it's liberating from the seeming realness of this. And you can be like, I'm disciplined, I'm working really hard, or I'm stuck, or I'm fighting, or I'm striving with Capricorn. And then in the 12th house Aquarius, you look at that, well, what does that represent? I'm having this experience of feeling stuck or in jail or judged or martyred or lost. If this is all a dream, what tarot card am I picking up right now? What is it reflecting about my own mind? And so there's this possibility of greater forgiveness by forgiving the world of symbols. There can be this obsession, this being said, with crazy conspiracy theories, right? Where we realize that all of these things are, we're just being lied to, we're being deceived by the Capricorn powers that be. And what's really going on is this, right? There's like an element of sort of that liberation quality of waking up from the boxes that we thought were real, but then it becomes its own box, where we then say, oh, and this is, it's us versus them, or the green people are really trying to eat us. And so the key is to keep the mind free, and that's forgiveness is essence. It's basically freedom from conditioning, freedom from believing what was never real. And so it's living without a ground, where there's a fundamental trust and peace in the symbology of this world, and a turning within for greater liberation. On other levels, this can also say, you know, I want to open up my life and create this utopian dream. We're all living in a way that reflects this greater 12th house ideal of purity and peace and forgiveness. Because I realize I can make the stream whatever I want it to be. So there can also be a lot of deep awakenings around manifestation and working with thought and clarity of thought in this signature as well.
Yeah, I think too about Aquarius being so future oriented. And to me, it speaks to this, you know, the future self coming from the future into the now, if you wanted to put it that way, and reimagining. And in that process, it's that liberation that comes in those realizations, in the 12th house being this place of solitude where we get to reinvent ourselves deeply from the within to the without, but letting go of this kind of, I could say, even linear progression of some improvement, but this radical shift where improvement and change comes from the future into the now. What comes up for me.
Yes. Do you need to attend to something with your cat so that you can do that and feel grounded, and I can ask my person to start a little later?
Yeah. I want to just take a moment if I could just, yeah.
Absolutely. Yeah. And let me send an email.
Okay. Okay.
Yeah.
Okay. Let me pause it.
Yeah. Okay.
Okay. First house. Okay. Moving right along. Pluto in the first house.
This is obviously initiating an entirely new cycle. And it says there are actions to take. There's a path to walk. There's a calling for self-leadership and self-trust here in order to initiate an entirely new cycle. The issue will be Capricorn first house. Let's say we're just coming from that precedent, or in general Capricorn. I know what I know, and I've done what I've done. And I need to be willing to respond and act in new ways. If you give the analogy of Pluto in Capricorn in the first being an entrepreneur.
Hold on just a second. I have to get him out of here. I'm sorry.
Sure.
I apologize. I have to pause the recording. All right.
Okay, so if we think about Pluto in Capricorn in the first as an entrepreneur, you're working very hard, initiating a new cycle, putting a lot of energy, a lot of gusto into your path. You create your own conditioning over time that says, okay, this is what I'm doing and this is where it's going. Aquarius wants to shatter all of that. The key phrase here is I need to be free enough to know my own capacity for new choices. Because what I'm here to do and my own purpose, my own path in life cannot be defined by the precedent and what I've done and what I've known. So it doesn't even matter if there's been a lot of success or failure prior to this point. Pluto in Aquarius in the first house says, there's a calling to experience something new, to actually access impulses that you may have not known. If there's been a sense of disempowerment, meaning I can't make choices, I don't feel powerful enough, I can't change the conditions of my life, I am not connected with my own agency, I just have to go with the flow. 'Cause that could be Pluto in the first can be either really harsh or disempowered and not really connected to that, right? It's a basic victim, victimizer situation. Same thing with the eighth house too. So we can have that energetic. If a soul has not been connected to their own will or their own no or their own yes, Aquarius is this crazily huge shattering impulse within that can feel incredibly anxious because it's sort of like a thunderstorm with a lot of first house energy happening inside. And if we're still suppressing that because, oh, I don't want to be angry, or I don't want to be, I don't want to make too many changes, I don't want to shock people, then the likelihood of there being sudden shocks in our life or us suddenly flipping out gets stronger. So the key is to embrace the calling of our own soul individuality to become and to move. Jeff Green speaks about Uranus in the first as beating to the beat of your drumming, marching to the beat of
They're
your own
being
drum.
the own drummer.
You're doing what you're doing. You're not looking at what other people are doing. And you have to just have confidence and trust in that. There can be a very erratic quality to it. And that erratic quality can create its own trauma if it's reactive. Right? If I've been so suppressed, I'm like, I'm gonna leave or do my own thing, or gosh darn it, and you throw the computer out of the window, you're gonna get billed for that window. And that's gonna be a setback. You might get sued. So there's a way to liberate and create, embrace your own freedom without being a rebel without a cause.
Yeah, it's a rebel with the cause, and it's in the cause of humanity. You are yourself, but it's in the context of what is good for humanity. I would think, too, that whole polarity between self and others.
Yeah, well, in the first house, there's a greater intelligence with Aquarius, and it's gonna consider more possibilities, but it is very much about me. And that seventh house, Leo, make sure you're keeping your heart open, that you're not being arrogant or aloof or just dismissing people. The fear with Pluto here could be, I'm afraid of making this choice. What if I don't make it? What if this is short-lived? What if I get hurt? What are the consequences? And so there's actually a strong invitation not to just be instinctive about these things. And there's a difference in this signature between being reactive and just acting upon our instincts. And we can say, oh, I had a strong feeling about this and I should just do this, versus getting quiet and becoming an observer and just seeing what the calling is that's calling us. So we follow it and we move with it. And that can be scary and insecure, but we can just go with it and not think about it because we're trusting it. And that's archetypally very different than a more reactive, impulsive way of being. Aquarius never wants to act impulsively, and that's different than being free and unconditioned.
Right. The whole notion of the rational mind, rational or ordered science, scientific, Aquarian scientific detachment.
That's right, exactly. Yeah.
All right. Second
You
house,
actually bring up the
second house.
analogy, if you think of first house Capricorn as like a army general, right? And you're planning your war, right? You're executing your actions. Aquarius is gonna climb a mountain. And before you make that next command, you're gonna see the whole playing field a lot more broadly. So we see more of the picture, and that frees up more options and choices that we couldn't otherwise see when we're lower down.
Yeah,
Okay.
good point. Thank you. The big picture.
Pluto in Aquarius in the second house. This is fundamentally about deconditioning from all the ways in which I'm supposed to live. So we think it's a funny thing, and this is very much a Capricorn. Capricorn embodies just the general cultural, social assumption that we're all conditioned by. And they're questioned and they transform slowly in time, but they're always there. To live here, I have to earn a living. crazy thought. I mean, we don't think about that enough. To earn a living qualifies my deserving and my capacity even to live. So we're very removed from sort of the inherent nature of survival. And it also means we've made survival a very personal solo thing. I gotta do something to earn my living, or for my family, right? Or for my tribe, right? But the at best, or for my church or whatever, we don't recognize that all resources are a part of a greater ecosystem. And survival implies resources. Like everything that we survive upon is a resource that comes from the earth. It's like simple as that. And we just need to think differently and more creatively about it. What would it be like for more people, two dimensions, more people to come together and say, hey, we have kids, you need housing, we need to make some food, let's pull together and get some land. And when we come together and we think in collectiveness, survival is enhanced. But there can also be this deep sense of I'm alone, my job isn't working out, or I don't have the money that I need, and I'm deeply isolated. Aquarius second house can be the apex of isolation. I'm a hermit alone in my own world, and I don't have any friend. I don't have any community connection. That's one extreme, right? The key with Aquarius in the second house is to free the mind from the boxes, and there can be that sense of, well, I have to isolate myself because my survival is threatened otherwise. If I'm a part of society, or if I share or relate to other people, I'm going to be threatened in some way. Any Aquarius signature can be a trauma signature. And there could be with Aquarius in the second house, this strong sense of, I gotta isolate and protect myself because of that subconscious Uranian memory. In a past life, I was living on a land, and the entire land was, dehydrated by the fires that the neighboring, warlords affected, and my whole community died of starvation. So we free ourselves from the fear of not having enough, from the fear of scarcity, and we get out of isolation, either overtly or just simply in the energetic of, I'm willing to think more broadly and recognize I can have what I need by bringing forth more of my essence. That Leo eighth house is essential because it says if you stay in isolation and you don't give of yourself, share your heart, share your beauty, share your creative essence, if you don't put efforts towards giving, you're not going to attract and come into resonance with other people. You're not going to be in a, you're not going to allow for resources to come to you, for community to come together where sharing and collaboration can happen in ways beyond what you could imagine. It's an ecosystem. You plant a bunch of seeds in your second house garden, and more seeds come, and an ecosystem and a forest grows. And you couldn't create the forest, but you had to be a part of it. You had to participate. So the attachments can be the attachments to a fear of survival. I don't want to let go. I don't want to share. I don't want to connect. Or just this strong sense of, I don't want to leave the known, because if I do, I'm going to be insecure and I'm not going to have what I need. So there's a calling to think more intelligently about survival and to expand it to the collective. When we think collectively, when I think about my survival as a part of the larger ecosystem of life, what happens?
Great. Awesome. Okay. We got two more houses, third and fourth. We're
Okay.
almost done. You're on a
Which one's
roll.
your which one's yours? Which house is yours?
Well, we did mine was fifth, so we did that
Oh,
one.
yours as well. Okay. Do
Yeah.
we both have a Virgo ascendant?
Actually, I
Or
have Libra
Libra.
because I use a
Libra
whole set of
ascendant. Yeah.
houses. Yeah.
Perfect. Okay. All right.
Third house. Pluto.
You call a tree enough times that when you look at it, you're not seeing what it is, you're seeing a concept that you've established in your mind. You read an astrology book and you hear a Pluto means transmutation. And you look at a chart and you just say some words that, oh, Pluto is in your third house. Oh, you're going to be, really transforming the way you learn. Or maybe you're going to start studying psychology. And it gets to a point where our mental associations form logical frameworks in our mind that aren't very deep. They're just conditioned patterns, or the thoughts that we've said. They're the vocabulary words that we Capricorn memorized in school to pass the test, right? It's what was acceptable in the community because these are the words that everyone speaks. The words that we use to describe things on some level also reflects the openness and the curiosity of the mind to actually find out what things are. We always ask questions, and the questions elicit new data. It's like the openness of the mind is what creates the possibility of learning to happen in the first place. Most of us, most of the time, walk through life with our, this is why I say for my training program, it's open to new students and advanced practitioners. I find the new students have an easier time learning because I'm teaching a particular paradigm that's about the soul's evolutionary journey. And so we have a lot of concepts and words that we've just learned. And I'm really inviting people to look at things according to what they are. Like, look at it with a fresh mind. What is its evolutionary nature? What's its archetypal essence beyond all of the conditions and associations that we're familiar with? So the tree is not a tree. That's a word. It's so much more. And we inhibit the mind's curiosity and possibility of learning. So you look through the telescope and you look at the stars. If the mind says, I've seen everything there is, you're not going to discover a new asteroid. I'm really into binary star theory. I personally believe that we're a part of a binary star system. Video on that with Walter Cruttendom on my channel. But there are so many scientists that are just observing, collecting data, reworking the same lunar soli theory for why the Earth, apparently, according to them, wobbles on its axis. Even though the logic doesn't make sense, we don't want to break down the constructs that we've already established. I was thinking earlier, logic doesn't necessarily mean sane. And all kinds of things from a Capricorn third house point of view have been written as law and believed. And also, like, what you're allowed to say, how you're allowed to express yourself, the beliefs and the words and the education, that's okay. All of it can be absolutely absurd. And so Aquarius wants to open up the mind, be available to shatter your existing logical conclusions with new data, which means look from a higher lens, right? Broaden your telescope view, climb a higher mountain. The more we objectify our reality, the more we see everything from a bird's eye view. And so we see all of the movements in the systems, and we realize, oh, there are larger cycles at play here.
Part of a larger whole,
It's a fun astrological thought. The way that I talk about progressions, like secondary progressions, which is just, it's like a way of taking a chart, and one day of transits equals 1 year of progression. So your seventh day of life equals your seventh year of progression, things like that. It's like a tree falling. It's progressions will slow down that tree X times whatever. And so what was just a falling, and we say a tree fell, when you slow it down, which is another way of saying when the mind that's observing it gets quieter and slows down and goes beyond linear time, and you watch something happening, seemingly not falling down in 5 seconds, but falling down in 5 years. There's so much more nuance that you can map and observe and talk about. It's the size scale and the time scale within which we're looking at things that then defines the extent to which we're able to describe its parameters and its nature. So we're always wanting to broaden and see from a higher dimension to grasp more of the picture. And that's true with everything in our life. So this is opening the mind. So the fear, the attachments are to the known. These are the socially acceptable thoughts and logical conclusions and ideas. Or I've written my book about this, or I've taught these things, or I've been speaking these words. Even socially, I don't want to be disagreeable. We say, how you doing? Oh, da 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 da. We have these ways of being. But what if we're just actually looking at what is and using words to describe actual experience? There can be a lot of fear of not being able to relate socially, or I can't talk to anyone, right? It's like people are just talking on these concepts and ideas. What is it like to be true and free in your own mind and not be afraid of that?
Right. The fear of being misunderstood or not understood
Oh, yeah, that's right.
or being beyond that.
Yep. And that can be a big piece also with the ninth house as well.
Yeah, polarity. All right, fourth house.
Okay.
Final house, the fourth, the angular
My
fourth,
apologies
the
to
root.
those from the 12th to 4th. We've kind of gone through these a little more quickly, but it is what it is.
It's still rich.
Okay.
Pluto.
Fourth house pertains to bonding, emotional security, connection, our energetic sense of home, where we feel rooted and grounded and safe and secure. It's our nurturing imprinting. Capricorn nurturing imprinting says there needs to be some level of continuity and security and ground and reliability there. But there can also be a lot of judgment. Don't cry, right? Or men don't hold hands with each other. All these things, or women should act this way, right? All these things that actually get in the way of our emotional discharge, which is really the thing we have to go through in order to feel fundamentally safe, right? A baby has to cry, or a toddler has to feel hurt and just express their emotion, and then they're done. When that's suppressed, we then freeze up and like, oh, I can't express that. I can't feel that. I can't have these feelings, right? I can't express this emotion. So fourth house Aquarius here is freeing up the emotional body. Whatever suppressed trauma or fracturing, emotional fracturing, or a sense of I'm not being cared for, I don't belong, or I don't feel safe, whatever that is, that can manifest as projection, which comes through in relationship, where suddenly we're afraid of, being left alone, or we don't want anyone to touch us. These things that we don't understand why that's there, and just latent trauma within our own individuated unconscious. This wants to break through that. And so this is about real penetrating deep intimacy with our own inner reality, being able to access and open up anything that's become frozen. And of course, it's how can I do that if I'm not certain that I'm going to be cared for or protected? And it's about realizing I am grounded and secured and sourced within my own self. And then I get to then attract tribe and people into my life that become my family. And so whether that's an existing family or just friendships, there's a way of human beings being there for one another, caring for one another in a way that says, I'm here with you. I can nurture and care for you and hold you and be with you and hold space. That's the paradox of the fourth house. It is about learning how to nurture and care for ourselves and others as we grow. But also, as we grow, we need to be cared for as well. So, if there is some sort of lacking in that in our upbringing, which to some extent all of us have that, there's a need to almost learn how to reparent ourselves. And that often will then take us back into, how do I let people in? Or how do I allow myself to be support? What kind of care do I need? How do I create a home experience for myself that's nurturing and caring? What are the boundaries that I need to create to support that? I think this can really highlight a sense of alienation or different. Like, I don't really relate to my family or my home or where I come from, or I've been trying to be belonged. I've been trying to belong and fit in to these paradigms,
Yeah,
and I
we
can't. I'm
call
not
it
being.
family. You know, it's a whole
Yeah.
new definition of family, of what
Yep.
family is.
Exactly. And we could even realize, instead of trying to, be understood or loved or accepted for who I am, I get to love and accept and understand my own self. And I've seen this a lot with strong Aquarius fourth house stuff. It's like at a certain point, emotional memories can reemerge, positive or negative, that really relates to whatever's beginning to awaken or blossom within the soul. And as that reemerges, that needs a space, right? Because again, the fourth house, it's a womb. We need to be in a container of knowing ourselves to be safe. And if there's too much that emerges too quickly, that can actually feel very threatening to our ego structure. Like, oh, what do I do with all of this, right? So there are all these really neat modalities. One is like womb surround, like where all these people touch one person, or co-counseling, where you can work with a total stranger and you're just held in a container to emotionally discharge. And I think of that where there can be an impersonal sense of nurturing, where you're being cared for and supported, to just free up your emotional body. And that's the point. When we free up our emotional body, we can see clearly. We're not stuck or limited or defined by the projections of, am I safe? Am I loved? Am I wanted? Am I accepted here? We can feel whole within ourselves.
Beautiful. Wow, thank you so much. This has been
Yeah.
awesome. You're so generous to give us these really rich delineations.
Well, I'm so grateful for the
Very
opportunity.
grateful.
I was thinking earlier today, oh, we should do that because I would probably not motivate myself. On my, I would be too Virgo about it. I would be too meticulous and I would prepare too much. So just getting to do this with you allowed me to just,
Riff,
I
riff, riff.
appreciate that. Yeah.
Dang, you're a great
In
ripper.
relational space, I do, there's something that comes out a lot more easily for me and I appreciate that. So thank you.
Yes, it's beautiful. It's like it's just completely channeled. That's my experience of you. It's just how divinely it's you're such a beautiful channel for that, for the, all that wisdom, your higher self and source, and it just flows. I don't want to get in the way. I'm like, wind him up and let step back, man. I just it's just so awesome. So I'm very, very grateful. If anyone is interested in Ari's programs, arimoshe.com, arimoshe.com, and it's the link is below. Yes, and you're going to France. Have fun in France. Oh my God, how
Yeah, we're going to be
exciting.
anyone who's in France or wants to visit us the first weekend of France. We're going to be teaching in Paris and then doing a family Magdalene retreat, which you can learn more about. Get in touch with us. But yeah, I think it's on the 3rd. We're going to be doing a little Pluto workshop.
A little Pluto workshop. There are no such things as little Pluto workshops. No,
Right.
right, but
Yeah.
that's okay. It motivates us to get there, and then we go deep into the rabbit hole. We love hearing from you, so your comments are appreciated. We read everything. Please do feel free and to like, share, subscribe. We're very grateful. This has been Star Sound Speaks and Ari Moshe Wolf. See you next time. Namaste.